Welcome, everybody. Today we've got a very special guest. Now, I know I've said that before, but this is truly a remarkable occasion. Before I give you the name of our guest, I want to read some of the things that other people have said about him. Let's start with Brian Kurtz of Boardroom. Boardroom is one of the biggest newsletter companies in America. They do, I believe, around $100 million a year in sales, all derived from direct mail. Here's what Brian Kurtz says about our guest. America's best copywriter. How about KC Communications, another mega newsletter publisher? World's greatest copywriter. Marty Shenard, best copywriter in the world. Phillips Publishing, more winners than anyone else. Best copywriter we've ever used. How about what Target Marketing has to say about him? You can just about count the creative geniuses who revolutionized direct mail on the fingers of two hands, and they include our guest. Here's what Rodale Press has to say about him. And again, Rodale, a major, major force in mail order publishing. His name is the stuff of legend around here. Against other top creative talent, he has never lost a split-run test in selling any of our books. From Who's Mailing What? Possibly the most respected copywriter in the direct marketing business. And then this one from the late, great Eugene Schwartz. There are, I'd say, only four or five A-level direct response copywriters in the country, the true masters. And Gene says, our guest is on that short list. For those of you that are on the inside of direct mail, you've probably already guessed who our guest is today. For those of you that are not, you're in for a great treat. It's my great honor and privilege and joy to introduce Gary Bensavenga. Gary, welcome. I am so delighted to have you on a call. I'm never nervous about anything. I can stand in front of hundreds of people and talk without my pulse going fast, but my heart is racing. I have to just admit that.
Well, thank you so much, Ken. What a beautiful introduction. I'll have to replay that to my family and friends. I'll remind them of what good things other people have said. I truly appreciate that. I have never called myself the world's greatest copywriter. I think that's kind of like an actor or a singer saying he or she is the greatest. But the copywriter in me loves that these other good people have said that, so I'm thrilled.
And for those of us that write ad copy and are students of this and are passionate about it, we all know the name Gary Bensavenga. And when I told some of my friends that I was actually going to be talking with you, they were green with envy. So for those of you who are new to Gary, let me just give a little background on who he is and his place in the direct marketing industry. Basically, there are a handful of publishing companies who have attained really significant size, Rodale, Boardroom, Phillips, KCI, Agora. These are not small companies. As I mentioned before, they're doing in the tens of millions and in some cases the hundreds of millions of dollars a year in annual sales. And their businesses are virtually 100% dependent on direct mail copy. Therefore, it doesn't take too big a leap of logic to realize that those companies are willing to pay the absolute top dollar for the best copy they can possibly get. And they not only are willing to pay the top dollar, but they're willing to pay top dollar to several writers at a time to each take a crack at a single product, because one product may generate many, many millions of dollars in sales for them. So they know how important a direct mail letter is. So in the world of direct mail and direct response copywriting, the very, very best of the best take a shot at writing what we call control pieces for these publishers. And over the years, and you heard the introduction, Gary Bensavenga has established himself as the number one direct mail writer, not because other people say it or because his friends think it, but because when it comes to who is the guy who writes the mail pieces that nobody else can beat, that are mailed in the tens of millions, that sell millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of books and newsletter subscriptions, the same name comes up over and over and over again, Gary Bensavenga. And today on this call, we're going to talk a little bit about how Gary became Gary Bensavenga, his learning process, which included, imagine this, he actually worked directly with David Ogilvy. He worked with John Caples. He worked with Ted Nicholas. I mean, these are people that most of us only read about, and Gary actually worked with them and learned directly from them. So we're going to talk about the process of becoming a copywriter, in particular his process. And we're also going to talk about some of his secrets, some of the things he's learned over the last three-plus decades of creating the top response direct mail copy in the world. So let's start at the beginning. Now, I doubt that you, as a boy, dreamed of becoming the world's most highly regarded direct mail copywriter. Where are you from, and what kind of a background do you have?
First, Ken, let me say that this is the first time I'm giving an interview to anybody on the techniques and processes that I've used to create consistently winning direct mail. I think everything that I will say is kind of geared towards one thing, which is trying to take the process of creating a direct mail package. When I started, I've been in the business 37 years, and probably for the first 10 years or so, as I was learning the craft of writing powerful direct response copy, you could not have pitted me against any really high-level copywriter and expected me to do a decent showing, because I was learning my craft, and it really took me that long to kind of put it all together. What I was trying to do in my early years in the business is just seek out those people who could teach me the best secrets of direct marketing, and then I would move on to the next guru that would be willing to share any of his knowledge with me. So after about 10 years in the business, working for others, I went out on my own, and I learned a few more things. I innovated a few things there. Then after that time, after I guess about 12 years, from that point on, my copy became almost unbeatable. And what I'd like to do as I go through each of perhaps the chronological learning stages I went through is to condense maybe 37 years into 37 minutes of what I learned along the way at each point, so that your readers don't have to take as long as, your listeners rather, don't have to take as long as it took me to figure it all out. Basically what happened was that when I was in high school, no, I never did dream of becoming a direct mail writer. When I was in high school, my dad, who was a man of quite modest means, he really came to maturity in the years of the Great Depression and took a job with the city of New York and never made much money, but he was a very bright man, a very loving man. And in high school, he called me over to his table one day and said, you know, listen, you've got to be thinking about your future. And I thought, oh, here it comes. He's going to tell me what he wants to be in life. But he surprised me, and he said, look, the only thing I want you to remember is that I want you to find a field that you will really love. And it might be hard to know what you're going to love at first, so, you know, try a few different things. But once you find the thing you love, stick with it. Try to become the best at it. Because if you do love it, you will become one of the best people at it, and every day will be a joy because you'll wake up early in the morning just not being able to wait to get to your work, and it won't be a chore for you. It'll be play, and that's all I want you to do. That's your main job, is to figure out what you love to do in life.
Wow, what lovely advice.
It was fantastic. I mean, at the time, I loved nothing more than basketball, and I was destined never to grow beyond 5'11" with a very questionable jump shot. So that option for the Knicks was not in my crystal ball. So
you're from New York, right?
I'm from New York.
Okay.
I grew
okay.
up in Brooklyn, and now I live out in the Hamptons,
okay.
where I'm speaking to you now. Anyway, when I realized that my jump shot was not as great as I thought it could evolve into, I better find something else. In some way, I wanted to have something to do with language, English language. My dad could not afford to go to send me to college, so I had to get a job right after high school, and I went to college at night on my own. I just had to get a job somewhere, so I tried to land a job as either an editor or a writer, copywriter, and I applied to Prentice Hall, among other places, which it probably still is. I'm not sure where they're located now, but in those days they were in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey, and they were a great training ground for direct mail copywriters. And I applied to the editorial department and to the copywriting department. And the fellow in the editorial department, I wrote a letter, and I thought, probably like many people do when they start out in advertising, that really great advertising is full of clever puns and plays on words and things which actually have nothing to do, as you know, with really effective advertising. I didn't know that then. I was really a rank amateur. And so I wrote a letter saying a few things, and one of them was, look, hire me, and you can count on me for, I think it was, dependable diligence and independent creativity. You know, some line that just happened to pop into my head. So he called me in, and he said, you know, well, we have openings for editors, and we have openings, a couple of openings for writers. But, you know, I'm a little wary about putting you in the editorial department because you misspelled a word in your cover letter, And the word you misspelled was diligence. And
uh-huh.
Now, isn't that ironic? So I said, yeah, that doesn't sound too promising. So, we'll give you a shot over in the copywriting department.
So there's hope for all of us.
There's hope for all of us. In those days, Prentice Hall had this sort of little hidden department. Because Prentice Hall published a lot of very upscale and very highly respected books on law and medicine, college textbooks. But they kept this little hidden division off to the side, which sold mail order books, and they also sold like the psychic phenomena books. Anything that would sell by mail order in book form, they would sell.
Was that called Parker Publishing?
That was called Parker. When the book was so off the charts strange, they would take the Prentice Hall logo off and put Parker Publishing on it. Exactly.
Okay.
Those were for some of the more esoteric psychic phenomena books. But they sold books on how to be a better basketball coach, how to be a better biology teacher, all how-to books, real estate, how to invest, all kinds of things like that, as well as these psychic type of books. And I was so lucky to get involved there. I mean, in my mind, I was saying someday I'm going to be in the real world of advertising, in the TV world, where you can really get famous and write those catchy commercials. But I said, this is the stepping stone, so let me start here. But I was so lucky to have a really great copy chief who on my first assignment said, here's the way we do it around here. When you get a book to write about, you'll have about 2 or 3 weeks to create a 4-page letter mailing with a little flyer as well. And the way we're going to do it is I, as a copy chief, know just about every other similar book we've ever promoted on that subject. And I'm going to tell you to go to the files, pull out the 6 to a dozen mailings that have we've tried on similar books. I'm going to show you the ones that bombed, and I'm going to show you the ones that were the best.
Hmm.
What I want you to do is study those mailings first before you do anything. Don't do what bombed. Do what worked. And I was all set to be Mr. Originality and you know, come up with all. And my first several drafts of whatever I would do, he would say, no, look, you've got to stop with the puns. You've got to stop with trying to show how clever you are.
Mm.
You have to always remember, you, as the copywriter, are not the star of this letter. The product is, okay? Mm. Nobody out there is going to applaud your verbal tap dance when you're finished or give you a standing ovation because of your linguistic fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what it's about here. What you need to have them say when they've read your copy is, I've got to get this book. And so slowly but surely, I came around to understanding that that's the only kind of copy he would accept, and I put my own ego on the back burner, you know, because as a young fellow, I was so eager to make a name for myself. And believe it or not, to this day, much of the advertising industry is based on that, especially those who don't have any measurement attached to their ads, and you see so many of those on TV. They tend to just try to win applause from their contemporaries, their other advertising colleagues. And that's why they have all kinds of advertising awards. And even in direct response, there are many awards. Even the Caples Award is
mm-hmm.
given for originality and creativity, not for increased sales results, unfortunately. It would make John Caples, I think, turn over his grave.
And you were very lucky then to get that lesson right from the start.
Exactly. Results is the altar at which we all pray in direct marketing. And it's not about awards. It's not about ego. It's not about how clever it was. It's about we won't know how good a letter it is or a website or anything until it runs and the market tells us. And there are often, almost always, very big surprises in what works and what doesn't. That's kind of the background that I came from, was at first training ground at Prentice Hall, but just go to the files, see what worked, see what didn't work, and imitate what did work.
Do you remember,
sure.
any of the books that you wrote ads for?
I think my very first one was something called Biology Teacher's Guide. A very boring book, but, you know, biology teachers need lesson plans, and they need to know as much as a book can give them. And it was a modest seller. Luckily, I hit a few winners along the way. Not many, but enough for them to keep me on hand. I thought I actually knew more than I did, so I thought it was time after about a year and a half, to move on. And the commute was very long for me. They were in New Jersey, and I was commuting from Long Island.
Oh, wow.
And direct response was really booming then. This was in the late 60s, and it was really starting to grow tremendously. And so there was great demand for anybody who had, you know, I mean, I thought I knew so much about it now that I had a year under my belt. So I was ready to hit the big city in Manhattan and be hired by some ad agencies, which is the next step that I went to. And I found I didn't know as much as I thought I did. I mean, without that very helpful copy chief kind of guiding me and doing more than I realized I realized he was doing in helping me come up with a couple of winners. I just thought I was better than I really was, and quickly got taken aback and went to one agency and then another where I thought I'd get into something that I'd really like. And this particular agency happened to be small direct in New York, a small direct response shop that had like the RCA Record Club and a few other accounts. And I was so happy when I got that job because I was married very young. I was 19. My wife was 18. Mm. 2 years later, we had our first child. And so by then, by my early 20s, I was already kind of full of responsibilities, and I really needed this job. So I was so happy to get this really good, well-paying job in New York City, and I was going to college at night, and I really had a full plate. A couple of months after I had the job, just doing little things here and there, filling in some of the brochure copy that they would let a junior copywriter handle, the owner of the company, the agency, came in and said, okay, we got a big new account, we just got them in, and you have 2 days to write an ad for one of these learning centers where children can come in and learn, get better tutoring that they might be available to help them with a special problem, whatever.
Oh.
It's a very good client. If we like the ad, you get to keep your job. And then he walked out of my cubicle, slapped me on the back and walked out of my cubicle. You're going to do great.
Welcome to New York.
Welcome to New York, right. So I had given up smoking about a year early, and just my first step was very rationally run down to the candy store and buy another pack of cigarettes. And I was so nervous because I really needed a job. I needed the income, and I hadn't a clue. I mean, because it was really much easier than if I perceived it to be back at Prentice Hall, because you got a book and you can go to page so-and-so to say, well, the author describes this. It's an easier formula, at least at that time it was for me, than to just whole cloth write an ad about something that wasn't in book form. So this was it was a conceptual sell to get parents to inquire about this special school for their children. So anyway, luckily I was able to do well enough that he came back in 2 days and he took the copy away without saying a word. Then he came back about an hour later, kind of with a scowl on his face, and said, "Okay, it was good enough that you still keep your job." But you got to keep on your toes. It wasn't that good. They had some rewriting to do. But then they transferred me over to their record club account, and it was the RCA Record Club, and their reason for being was to sell records by the month and records and tapes. And there I had to, really figure out how to sell a Frank Sinatra record or a Dolly Parton album or a Dean Martin. It was a totally different realm then, because I said, well, what can I write about Frank Sinatra? And I was still not educated enough about how to write great copy that I thought it kind of came out of one's head whole cloth, like from the brow of Zeus or something.
Uh-huh,
it's like in those days we used typewriters, and I would roll down a piece of typewriter, and like the proverbial screenwriter or whoever is, faces that terrifying blank sheet, I would just sit there sweating bullets, and I had an ogre, a different copy, he was even worse than the first guy, next office, who would say, don't take too long with that, I need it by 3 o'clock, whatever, and I'd have to write something about, say, Frank Sinatra. So luckily there, I kind of bumbled my way through also, but I really knew I was in trouble because I felt, I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I was just looking at the sheet of paper, and I have no idea, no clue as to really what a great piece of copy should be. And it really bothered me. It was kind of a very humiliating and humbling, that experience that I had, that on any given day, I'm just one boss's bad mood away from losing my income, which I really need.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to learn what I'm doing here. So I started studying some books like Vic Schwab, or How to Write a Great Advertisement.
Mm-hmm.
Ran to the bookstore on my lunch hour and bought John Caple's books, a couple of others that were around at the time. There have never been many great books on advertising. And I even took some courses on how to overcome writer's block, because that's what I thought I suffered from. What I really found, the more I read Caple's and the more I learned from these other books that I started reading, and just my own experience, that research is the answer for writer's block. And that was a real breakthrough. I mean, I would say that the first breakthrough I learned in my own evolution, and that anybody in direct marketing, there are not many landmarks of understanding that you have to pass through to really get good at direct marketing. But the first one is, what I learned at my first job, is that advertising is salesmanship multiplied. The way you get good at it is to look at what has worked, looked at what has, just what my first copy chief told me, avoid what hasn't worked, and just try to learn from that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say learn from, I don't mean copy it by rote, just sort of try to absorb the principles, because too many people think you can just cut and paste a headline and you're going to do just as well as the first one, and that's really not how it works. We try to understand the psychology of why this piece worked and the other one didn't. And that's a lifelong avocation that everybody in this business should try. I call it my one-a-day marketing vitamin. Every single day I try to read a control ad and
wow.
that I haven't written, but somebody else, just to see what is he doing that or she's doing that made this a control ad. And then, which is even tougher, how could I make it better?
Mm.
But if you kind of do that every day, man, you get really good
mm-hmm.
at recognizing what's good and having confidence in your own ability to even at least come up with things that are worth testing to beat it.
Mm-hmm.
And getting into that habit really served me well later on when I did have to come up against really world-class control packages, and it was my job to beat them. And I'll tell you the process later that I evolved into to make that happen.
Okay.
But anyway, so that was the first lesson, salesmanship, and learn from past experience what sells and what doesn't. Then the second lesson that I learned, and it's really part of the first, really all of these following lessons are sub-lessons of what it takes to be a great salesperson. And the second one is that research will cure a lot of sins, and that if you do enough research, you'll have so much good material in you before you try to write. Don't just sit down and try to write or dream something up out of your head. You've got to come up with really in-depth research. So even today, I mean, I'm kind of retired now, and one of the reasons I'm sharing my secrets is that I'm really not taking clients anymore. I have a couple that I, for old time's sake, I work with. But I made enough money from all the royalties I've earned that, you know, I can really, it's time to give back something. My wife and I underwrite a big Hamptons celebrity chef party out here to raise money for handicapped children. We do that every year. So we give back financially, and I also want to give back vocationally. So many people helped me along the way that it's really time now to be able to share these things, because I don't have to worry about all of my competitive copywriters now who use them against me.
Creating rival gunslingers.
Yeah, exactly. The last thing I ever wanted to do was tell some of these other top guns some of my secrets for edging them out on occasion. So anyway, so the second major lesson that I learned was that really tremendously in-depth, the more research you can do, the better. And as soon as I started doing that, for example, on a Frank Sinatra album, instead of just saying, making up, you know, clever copy about, say, the title song of My Way, I would go into, well, how did that song get created? Why did Frank love that song so much? Who wrote it? Did he write it just for Frank, or did somebody else record it first? And is there any other interesting story you can tell about that one song? And then you can go into depth like that about several of the songs, and those albums would just fly out the door. The more interest, based on research, that you would bring to that subject. And it's an old saying, it's like with acting, there's no small roles, only small actors.
Mm-hmm.
There's no boring subject, only boring writers. I mean, you can make anything interesting if you just research it enough and tie it to what people care about in their lives. So that was the second great, great lesson that I learned, that you'll never have to worry about writer's block when you just immerse yourself in knowledge of that subject, knowledge of your prospect. The next job I got after that was BBDO was looking for a copywriter, and I applied and had the chance there to work with John Caples, and I got to know him personally, and we became friends. Something of a mentor to me. I don't want to imply that every day I went into BBDO, which is, you know, probably still one of the world's biggest ad agencies, and that John Caples would call me into his office and put his arm around me and tell me what he was at the top of his game.
Oh, sure.
And I'm just an up-and-coming junior copywriter. But we did get to know each other, and he was the most genial man, and he would read some of my copy and point out the things that he liked. We'd never point out what he didn't like. He just said, I like this, I like that. And just the nicest man. He was somebody who never, at least when I knew him, ran a department or was the president of the company. He had come up all through previous mail order agencies and had written his good books, his wonderful books, and was just sort of like an asset of the company that the company
mm-hmm.
would turn to whenever they wanted a famous face or whenever somebody came and said, I need John Caples to work on this. They would say, okay, go to it with John. But he was sort of his own little wing of the company, and he would just do his own thing. He would write his books, he would write his columns, and handle a few select projects. He didn't run the direct marketing department. That was somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, you know, he would come around because his main love was direct response advertising, and teach us things and show us, share the results of his many tests. And that was phenomenal. Again, just an extension of what that first copy chief taught me, that the more tests you know about, the fewer mistakes you're going to make, because you're not going to repeat the things that happened in those losing ads. And the more tests you know that were blockbusters, and those are the real precious ones, the more pieces that you study that are blockbusters, the more you sort of get it into your blood and into your instinct how to form a blockbuster ad.
And probably nobody saw more campaign test results than John Caples.
Right. No, he was not only a writer, but he was an engineer as well. He had been in the Navy as an engineer, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was very methodical in keeping track. I usually find that the world is divided into sort of like English majors and math majors, and usually the English majors don't keep very good track of things, but he was sort of both, and he took meticulous records of every headline that he tested. Everybody in this industry should have his books and know the results of his tests. You know, for decades, people have picked over his headlines. Probably there aren't many people who could, if you hit them with his split run results, which are available in any of his books, could they pick the winner?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a crime. I mean, that's sort of advertising malpractice. You should know that cold.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to pass any quiz that tests you on what's in a Caples book or a Vic Schwab's book or an Ogilvy book. As one of my later copy chiefs told me, he said, you know, for some reason, a lot of people think they can get through the advertising world on opinions. I mean, everybody has an opinion of what good advertising is, but you don't. If you need brain surgery, you don't go to somebody who has a pretty good opinion about
right.
You know, how to operate on your brain. You want somebody who knows the textbook cold, has good experience, and does an experiment with his opinions on your brain. And he says advertising is the same way. It's somewhat of an art. Well, writing and creating is somewhat of an art, but there's a lot more science to it, especially when you have these proven results. And to not know them, to ignore them, is, I think, marketing malpractice. So anyway, anybody listening to this tape should go out and, as a first thing, buy any book by Caples or Ogilvy or Victor Schwab or another fellow, Ross Reeves, if you can find his book out of print called Reality in Advertising.
And the irony is, except for the Ross Reeves book, the other three are always in print, very affordable. I think the John Caples Tested Advertising is still around $12.95.
But that's, you know, probably the best investment you'll ever make. I mean, people think about what stock should I invest in. Invest in your own knowledge through books, through tapes, through courses. It'll always come back to you tenfold, 50-fold, 100-fold. It's the best thing you can possibly invest in is your own knowledge.
So you got the benefit of John Caples' testing experience because he would actually show you test results?
He would, and he would talk about any other test that he had conducted, very free with research where he wanted to share.
Was it formal training, or was there something?
Oh, no, it's very off the cuff whenever he wanted to buy. And it's funny, there's a tradition. I don't know whether it's like this anymore in the ad agencies. I suspect not, because they've become so formalized. But then, in all the agencies that I was, sort of Friday afternoon was kind of a kickback day, because nobody had a deadline for Saturday, because the clients didn't work on Saturday. So you kind of knew that you at least have the weekend to catch up on something. So Friday afternoons were kind of a day when the staff would kick back a little bit. And very often, somebody like John Caples might come around and want to talk shop.
Mm-hmm.
And those are great, because you had these really wizened old copy chiefs and people like John Caples and other direct marketing people, you know, having fun, just almost like a jam session, talking about great headlines, swapping outrageously funny stories of clients they do or weird copywriters, how neurotic they were and the lengths they went to avoid assignments. And, you know, just have a ball, but you learn so much in just brainstorming like that. Not even brainstorming, that's even too formal, but just kicking around ideas. You know, what would you do with this account, you know, John, how would you handle this? And he said, well, I remember back in so-and-so, such a time, we had a similar situation, and the one that won was an ad that featured this, and it just opened up all our minds to something totally new that we wouldn't have thought of, you know. So, and then other agencies that I went to after that, they practiced that same kind of informal teaching method. Nothing ever was formal, except at Ogilvy. He took batches of us, like with group presentations and so on of it. The top people would come in and speak to the new recruits and tell them what works at Ogilvy, what doesn't work, what they expect you to do, and so on. And that was great. But most of the agencies were not as formal as that. And I think that's missing today. I think a lot of people can go through a whole company, a career almost, like 5-10 years, and never have some of the wiser hands that have been through a lot of testing come in and say, look, here's what we've learned here, here's what we didn't learn, and so on, and really give that education. And, I mean, there's something that's part of what I hope to do for people, is to share that knowledge that I've gained over the years and hope that they do it in turn with others. But, it was the best part is just learning what worked and what didn't, just like that first copy chief told me.
Whenever I talk to a very accomplished copywriter, they can name the specific individuals who helped them along the way. In other words, it's good to get the books and learn them. It's good to write a lot and test a lot of things. But there's nothing like being able to sit down with a pro.
Right,
and a veteran who can just chat, just as you mentioned, just informally about
right.
things. Right. So I'm really glad you're bringing some of this to light, because you're right. I don't think it's something easy for people to get.
I do believe in sort of hero worship, especially when you're trying to learn a craft or become accomplished in anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good to have heroes. I mean, I'm not ashamed to think back then, and even now, I mean, I really love to learn everything I can about somebody I admire tremendously and try to think how they would think.
Mm.
Because one of the steps that I got to later, it wasn't in my consciousness at this time, but was to really learn their books well, and then when I'm really stumped for something, almost use my mind to imagine a board meeting. And I call in my board of advisors, and seated around a table will be Claude Hopkins, and then David Oldsby next to him, and then John Caples next to him, and Gene Schwartz next to him.
Oh.
And I said, guys, I'm stumped. You really got to help me here. And I would say, you know, Claude Hopkins, what would you do in this situation? And maybe I'd sleep on that, you know, just envisioning that at night before I go to bed. And in the morning, I wake up writing like Claude Hopkins with brilliant, powerful offers. And, you know, I just know somehow my brain, you know, in a symbolic way, reached into all that book learning and pulled out what I would need to solve my problem. Despite all of the formal education and informal education that I learned from books and the writing and everything else, to really take it to the top level, at least in my case, you really have to start expanding your own mental power.
Mm.
And I will get into the ways I did that if, you know, the next stop along the way.
This is the end of Lesson 1 of the System Club interviews with Gary Bensavenga. Hi, my name is Ken McCarthy. It's rare in any field that a single individual becomes universally acknowledged as the best. That's exactly what our guest Gary Bensavenga has achieved in the field of direct mail copywriting. I highly recommend that you not only listen to this lesson several times, but that you also take active steps to adopt the attitudes and practices Gary talked about as he recounted the early years of his struggle to become a top-flight copywriter. It's clear that Gary did not come to copywriting with any special advantages. He started, as we all do, as a rank beginner, ignorant of even the most basic principles of the craft. But he learned. How many action items and guiding principles did you extract from this lesson? These are five that jumped out at me. Number one, do what you love. Number two, you are not the star of the letter, the product is. Number three, study what has worked in the past and what didn't work. Number four, the more research, the better. Number five, get help from heroes. You may have heard some of these, or maybe even all of these principles before, but how faithfully do you follow them? In the next lesson, we'll discover some of the principles Gary learned working at David Ogilvy's legendary advertising agency. We'll also learn about an obscure but highly successful direct response ad agency that honed his skills even further. Until then, this is Ken McCarthy for the System Club.